We were in the same group at school, Christian group, and he was 2 years older, so he was out of my league. And he was the head of the group, and then I ended up taking over for him. So he was kind of the star in my eyes of, you know, because he was in charge and stuff. And one day the Lord speaks to me, this is the man you're going to marry. And I mean, I've only heard the audible voice of God twice. Once was about marrying Eric because that was an act of faith. And the other time... The other time was about going into missions because I had zero interest. Zero. I didn't like to travel. Yeah. So I didn't know I was going to need that word about marrying him when the hard times came. I was like, well, I can't divorce him. The Lord told me I was going to marry him, so I guess I'm stuck. And we ended up getting into inner healing because we were with YWAM in Sweden, and it's a discipleship training program that we were part of. Eric ran them, and then we ran the base that hosted them. And we were finding people getting more and more broken. It just felt like every year people were less stable, less together, less understanding of God, less understanding of the Bible, less understanding and part of Christian culture. And that left us going, what is missing? And I had been reading Sanford books since I was a teenager. And so I had some grid for it, but when we started running into abuse, we knew we were out of our depth. It just was beyond what we knew. So we didn't intend to get into this stuff. It just came with working with people. And then God eventually called me to work with the sexually abused. I got a very specific call. And my fourth year of training in Denmark, Eric came with. So he came for my graduation, and he did the first year of training. And he was recognizing patterns that a lot of the guys he was working with who were sexually addicted, the addiction had started with a trauma, and they didn't realize that they had been sexually traumatized, because sometimes it was just play or experimentation or something they were supposed to like. So he ended up going through the training to be able to work with his sexually addicted guys. And then as he went on, he's become a better and better counselor. He's almost as good as me. He's actually much better than me in a lot of areas. He's also much better at introducing topics than I am. If we have topics to introduce, he's much better at laying the groundwork and introducing it. I like to deep sea dive. You know, I like to go deep. But that becomes overwhelming and troublesome sometimes if there's not enough foundation. So he's a very good one to do that part of it. So I always like to have him teach some of the key things because he'll make it more palatable and understandable. And he's entertaining. He usually has videos and stuff because he's more techie savvy than I am. I didn't even make it to a PowerPoint this time. So this is my husband. And he has become a very gifted counselor. He's always been a gifted leader and speaker. But his counseling skills, which saved us a lot of money, I have to say. When he became a good counselor and I could just go to him, I think that paid for all of his training, all the time that saved. And I'm not kidding. He's been my counselor the last few years. So I have a lot of faith in him because I've used him as a counselor. So when you ask him if he has experience, I might be his hardest case. go ahead. Say the truth. I don't mind. So I can handle it. A few years ago, we heard about somatic experiencing. Teo had given me a book on it years ago, Waking the Tiger Within, and I had been fascinated about it, and somebody mentioned it again. And we were praying about how to work better with the nervous system and with the subconscious. It wasn't an easy thing to always... We were working with people who really had high levels of trigger, like it would take almost nothing for them to be triggered, and how to work through things with them. And some of them didn't like God, didn't want prayer, you know. So we were looking for tools, and the Lord brought somatic experiencing up for us. And I went first, and Kathy went with me, lady in the back. We went to St. Louis, yep. And she hung out there while I went through the training. I was so nice to have a buddy. And so I went through it first. I loved it, told Eric about it. We went to the next one together, and then he has continued the training. So it's 9 modules. He's just completed the 4th out of the 9, and he's going to be talking about that. It's something we really love. It's basic. It works really well with powerful peace. We found it very helpful to understand what's going on with people and how to connect with them and calm them. So So let me pray for you. Lord, I ask that you would bless Eric, that you would flow through him, that your truth would be seen, and that you would give us the missing insight and keys that we need for our situations. Lord, I ask that you would highlight to each one here what they need to hear, and that the stuff that isn't for now or isn't for them in this situation would be able to just pass by and they wouldn't worry about it. So, Lord, I ask that it be like a fishing trip. We can fish out of this creek what we need, and that you will help us to know how to apply it to our lives and how to bring us closer to you and help those that we are helping. Thank you, Jesus. Amen.
Hope you had a good lunch. I volunteered to be the speaker after lunch because I know that can sometimes be the hardest one to do it. So, you know, we wanted to really make this seminar, I think I said a little bit of this last night, but we wanted to make this training seminar really about how to work with the body. And I hope you've gotten just a little bit of a taste because there is so much more that we could talk about, so much more that's really involved. I mean, we could have Teo for days and you heard just a tiny little bit from Lisa. We could have Lisa all week, you know, and to just pull out of these two and their brain and the experience and so on. And so I'm barely scratching the surface today, but my heart was really, you know, I wanted to give you something practical because I thought, you know, this was a gathering of people that some of you are counselors, I know, some of you are just work as doing inner healing, some of you are just interested for yourself. But this, what I'm going to share with you for the next hour, is something really practical a mom can do with her kids, you know, a pastor can do with his congregation, you can do between two friends. You don't have to be a counselor, psychologist, you know, anything like that. It's really that practical and that simple. And honestly, the teaching isn't even that in-depth. The teaching I'm going to give you, it's not even that big of a, you know, rocket science kind of thing. It's actually really simple. Problem is, we don't know about it, don't consciously think about it, and therefore, we don't use it. So what am I talking about? Before I even get into those initials I wrote up on the board, and maybe some of you recognize these initials, I'm talking about a way to get information. And here's what I mean. Generally speaking, counseling, therapy, whatever you want to call it, most oftentimes is very talk therapy oriented. And for any of you who do that, you know that talk therapy kind of only goes so far. You really can only get so much information out of a person. And when you're dealing with traumatized people in particular, can be real memory blocks. There can be, you know, absolute dissociation, so they're totally cut off from stuff in their life. There can be all sorts of ways. And if you've ever noticed, you know, when we are traumatized, when we, you know, have something really difficult happen in our life, we oftentimes drop down to lower age states. And can actually become very nonverbal. You know, sort of like that Marine tough guy SEAL, you know, image who under, you know, great duress will hide out in the corner, you know, in PTSD screaming for mommy. Because here we went from this big tough guy to mommy, mommy, help out, because he's dropped so lower down into this age where it's really hard. And so generally speaking, talk therapy doesn't work. Let me give you an example just in a non-abuse-related sense. Just take a common occurrence like a car accident. You know, I'm sure all of us have experienced it or at least driven by one or maybe even had small fender bender or really big accidents. And so oftentimes you're just, you know, discombobulated yourself. And then here comes the police, you know, and they want all the information. When this happened, what's your driver's license, what's your address, da-da-da-da. And your brain can't even think. You've just gone through an accident, and you're, and you really are offline. And so sometimes when we're ministering to people, even praying for them, you know, things can happen, like both Lisa and Teo have mentioned, you know, triggers. And suddenly now they're in a place where verbal is very hard to do. This is where a lot of the teaching Teo's already given us about blessing can really come in. But I want to add something to it a little bit in terms of a practical way. And it's simply by these initials, S-I-B-A-M, SIBAM. Now, this is not originally me. This actually comes from somatic experience, the thing that Lisa described to you. from Peter Levine. He is the author of that book Lisa mentioned, Waking the Tiger, and the creator of what's called Somatic Experience. There's lots of videos on YouTube if you're interested in more. This is a really in-depth training. But what I want to share with you is a way to get information from people that's so oftentimes very nonverbal or at least minimized verbal. So if you think of, you know, traditional talk therapy, to come back to the illustration, you know, somebody might ask someone who's been abused, for example, you know, well, what happened? How old were you? Who was it? Did you know him very well? All these questions, right? And all of a sudden, all these questions come up, and it's like, and the person actually can become re-triggered by even having to tell the story all over again. And so what if there's ways that we can do it without having to always know the story? See, as people that minister to others, we have to take our curiosity and put it aside. Because our own curiosity of who, what, when, where, all those things gets in the way. So we really have to put that aside. And so this tool I have found amazingly helpful. I really wish I had gotten this years ago, just in its simple form, because it gave me a better understanding of how to gather information. If you think of like different streams of just communication, you know, internet, newspaper, magazines, right? You always want to find out all these sources to be able to get the full picture. Well, Cybam is sort of like getting your newspaper and internet and personal report, and think of all the possible ways of getting information from someone. So it's this simple, but the application, you guys, is what I find so incredible. So the teaching is rather simple, but the application, the implications with the people we're trying to minister to is what really makes a difference, because they feel very understood without ever having to tell a story, and they actually process in their body things that they've never been able to process verbally before. So here's the premises of it before we get in the actual initials. Peter Levine developed this because he noticed that in the animal kingdom, when an animal was threatened and had some form of trauma, they oftentimes recovered. So think about, you know, kind of a classic example. You know, you're walking through the forest and a deer spots you. You know, you snap on a branch and the deer's, you know, ears perk up. And it pauses, and it does what's called orientating. It's looking and scanning for danger. Or it might actually freeze because I can't move, because if I move, the hunter might shoot me, right? And then if the danger becomes too much, you get too close or shots fired, whatever, if the deer isn't injured, it will take off. Everything's activated in the body of fight and flight, right? So it's taking off, it's running away, it's defending itself, whatever the situation is. And then as soon as the animal, in this case a deer, goes off and it realizes all of the stuff that it just went through, all this trauma, so to speak, a life-threatening event of being shot or possibly shot by a hunter, is now over, most animals have this amazing ability to shake it off. So in the case of a deer, they'll just, you know, and there's illustration after illustration from the animal kingdom we don't have time for, but they will shake it off and they will discharge all this energy. As you saw in the flyer, the quote isn't, trauma isn't about an event. Trauma is what happens into our nervous system. See, the very things that Lisa was sharing with you this morning about those molecules of emotion, when our nervous system gets activated, when we get up into this higher state of fight or flight, or we drop way down into freeze, all of this energy that maybe couldn't go somewhere, maybe didn't have a chance to defend itself or fight off, had to go somewhere, guess where it goes? Right into the body. And the body absorbs these emotions. Now, I know some of you in this room know about Splunkna protocol, for example. In Splunkna, you're actually releasing the energy and the emotions stored in the body part. And what happens is our nervous system gets activated, because normally we have these, you know, without getting too fancy today, we have if you think of your nervous system, we have two main lines in it called the sympathetic and parasympathetic. The fancy names just meaning how we get activated, right? So the higher energy is the sympathetic, and the lower energy is the parasympathetic. And in a normal person, we kind of go like this throughout the day, sort of as a nice, gentle wave. And we need, gas and a brake, correct. And we need this lower energy sometimes because this is where rest and digestion happens. This is where sexual activity happens, for example. This is why it's hard to be, you know, we get upset stomachs, for example, when we're upset or we're nervous or we're tense or whatever, and because everything is inside of us is really activated. And try to put, food in your stomach, you get sick. Your body wants to throw it up, right? Because you're so high up here. And so we need this gas and brake, like Lisa said. Now, the problem is with trauma, let me get another color. Oftentimes with trauma or even just re-triggering the trauma, and they all go flying. Re-triggering the trauma, the person will go from an event here that could be starting out something like this, and suddenly they get super triggered, and they're way off the chart. A lot of sympathetic energy is being activated. A memory, a flashback, sight, smell. Lots of this can come through different senses, for example. You know, where they're smelling something, they're seeing something, remembering something, dreaming something. It can be all sorts of different ways. And now they've gone way up here in this fight or flight. This is where fight or flight, when you think of the three main Fs, right? The fight or flight happens up here because they're so overly activated. And a lot of people, because they have had so much trauma, they live most of their life up here. And so a sound, boom, a closing door, whatever, can startle them or can make them, you know, sick, or it ends up going into their nervous system. They can develop fibromyalgia, all sorts of different kinds of diseases because this energy is trapped. So the premise is that if we can get them to experience it, not the re-trauma or not re-traumatizing the experience, but to get them to unwind it from their nervous system, then it actually can release that stored up energy of a defense mechanism that never got to be completed. And I'll explain what I mean by that in just a moment. Now, oftentimes with the people we minister to, they can get so activated, they're way up here, and then all of a sudden, my green pen works, all of a sudden they can drop all the way down and end up frozen. And we can wonder why, how they can go from freaking out to total collapse, right? Because they'll quickly and simply, if you think of this as over time, they'll drop down here to this freeze state. And then if you work with highly traumatized people, oftentimes you'll find patterns where they've learned to submit. Submit actually goes even lower because submit was the only way to survive. That was the absolute last coping mechanism. So without going into a lot more of this, you can see how wound up the energy would be. For example, one of the videos yet you can look at is Peter Levine working with a guy from Iraq War. His name is Ray, if you want to search that one. It's actually a beautiful video. And Ray has Tourette's syndrome. Sorry? Oh, just look for Peter Levine and then search for the word Ray right after it and you'll find it. And Ray was a combat veteran, and he was going along on the road, similar story to a lot of these guys, going along a road in a Humvee, and there was a landmine. And it exploded, and he was blown out of the truck, and several of his buddies were killed and so on. And so here he is years later, back in the States, trying to recover, and he has this incredible tic and Tourette's syndrome. And he does this all the time, unconsciously, and can't control it. And so Peter begins to work with him simply by this, having him open his jaw and make small jaw movements, just like he's eating air. He tells Ray, eat the air. It's really amazing. And long-term treatment can take a while, but just within their first session, Ray went from this to only a few times going like this. Because you probably wonder, why in the world the jaw, or what's that all about? You see, the landmine blew up. Remember the deer? It had a chance to run away, shake it off. Well, in big trauma like that, especially car accidents, falls, things like that, that we don't have a chance to defend, normally if you knew something was going to happen, your body would start to react. You might put your hands up. You brace yourself from impact, right? Think of a fall, right? If you're going to fall, your hands go out first, hopefully. And you know, it's our natural defense. Well, when an explosion happens, it happens so fast that Ray got stuck, so to speak, doing this. Can you see this almost in slow motion? His head going like this from the explosion, and then he's knocked unconscious. So the tic or the Tourette syndrome that's left over is his nervous system that never got a chance to finish, here's the key word, finish the act of defense. Now, you can't go back in time. We all wish we could sometimes, right? And the beauty of inner healing, the beauty of bringing Jesus into the picture, whether it's powerful peace or Emmanuel process, theophosics, right? Lots of prayer models, is we're asking the Lord to come into these memories. And even though we can't change the past, what brings healing is the Lord rewrites the meaning of the past. And that's what really brings healing. And sometimes our nervous system can be a big part of bringing that healing to the rest of the body. So in this case of Peter Levine working with Ray, just by the simple, right? He's working with that defense mechanism, the beginning of, oh my gosh, kaboom, right? Or whatever someone would, as they brace and tighten their jaw, brace for impact, all those things that you can imagine. All of that gets wound up into our nervous system. So now let's go back to this. When we're talking and we're ministering to people, again, whether you're a parent, teacher, professional psychologist, this is where it becomes really incredible. Because normally we just do talk, right? Take the car accident again. What's our first response? Oh my gosh, are you okay? Oh my goodness, what happened? Right? Do you hear the energy in my voice? Now that is meant to be out of kindness and concern, and we're trying to jump into that emotional, like, oh my gosh, you had a car accident? But actually, we've just jumped into their nervous system. And our now, oh my gosh, nervous system is actually resonating with theirs. This is why people need peace. This is where powerful peace. This is where blessing comes in. This is why Teo demonstrated last night, for you guys who weren't here, sorry, but you'll hear it on the tape, demonstrated here on the couch, you know, praying for someone, and there's long pauses. We're praying peace into their skin, peace into their body, right? Because that's what they need, is for their nervous system to feel. Sometimes, and for some people, they actually need to finish out and complete the actual thing they couldn't do. Like telling the abuser, no, get the bleep away from me, right? Or whatever, where they actually get to physically move. And I'll come back to that in a moment. Because what you just saw me do is what we're going into with these initials. So it's called CYBAM. And again, it's channels to find out information from the people you're ministering to. So S stands for sensation. Sensation. I'll do the red one. This is where we're actually asking good body questions. And by the way, this and the questions and a whole lot more notes are online, same as Lisa's and same as Teo's. We all have way more to say than we had time to say today or yesterday. But the first one is called sensations. And so you're looking for and helping them with, what are they sensing in their body? It's that simple. The implication, though, is incredible. Because so oftentimes when people are talking, they're out here, right? They're in their head, they're externalized, they're not wanting to feel their body. Sometimes questions can be so helpful without knowing the story. I minister to people that I don't even have to know their, for example, sexual abuse history. I don't need to know it because I can work with what they're sensing right now. as you come and sit on my couch, Julie, and as you said hello, and I can see this is hard for you. What do you notice in your body right now? What do you sense in your body? And the Julie, that's my proverbial name, the Julie might go, well, my stomach is just in knots. Okay, well, give some attention to that. Notice your stomach. Notice that it's in knots. And now usually you have to explain what you're doing because they'll probably give you a look like, huh? I came here to talk, right? So you have to educate them. But say, you know, you can say it as simple as, you know, I want to ask you some questions about your body. Because like the old song, you know, let me hear your body talk, right? Olivia Newton-John. I want to hear your, not that kind of song, right? Dating myself, I know. Well, all of you could, most of you could relate in this room, right? So let me hear your body talk. Let me hear what's going on because I can help you through this channel. And you can call it a channel of information. This is a way to understand you and to help better understand you. So Julie, you notice that knot in your stomach. Just give attention to that knot. There'll be a long pause. And now, if Julie can go there, I'll talk about what happens when they can't in a moment. But if Julie can go there, she might go, oh, gosh, I've never noticed that before. And as you notice it, what do you notice? It feels like a hard rock. Okay, notice that hard rock. Notice that, you know, because she said it felt like a knot or a hard rock. I'm actually jumping ahead of myself here because this is image. So now Julie just gave me not only a sensation of a tight stomach, but she gave me a picture to work with, an image, a hard rock or knotted intestine. And so other questions you can ask around this is, for example, if they just say, I just feel something in my stomach, that's very common. A lot of people aren't very in touch with their bodies. So if you were to give it an object or if it was a shape or a color, Julie, what might it be? That's a great question to ask. Because now as they're giving attention to this tightness in their stomach, they have to think, yeah, what does that look like? If it was a color, oh, it's black. Oh, so it's like a black tight knot or rock. Yeah. See, all of a sudden, they're noticing something they may have never noticed before because they're starting, what's happening is in their nervous system, they're starting to sink down. And they're starting to get in touch with places because of the high activation they never wanted to go to. Because I don't want to tell, you know, subconsciously, Lisa talked about that. If the subconscious doesn't want something, it wins, right? I don't want to tell you my story. I don't want to have to tell you all the details. I don't want to have to tell you I did X, Y, Z, and PDQ, right? So it doesn't want to have to say those things. But when you gives a shape and a color and a sensation, now we can talk about it. And the goal is not to find out about the story. The goal here with this work of Cybam, you can write this down, the goal is to see something move or shift. They say a little tongue-in-cheek in somatic experience, shift happens. Okay, a little tongue-in-cheek there for you. And because what they're looking for is they're looking for that shifting, because when it becomes lesser or greater or whatever, movement is good because it means something's beginning to unwind from their nervous system, right? So B stands for behavior, behavior. And this is where you have your eyes open and you're watching for behavior. Now, in my class that I'm taking, literally we took 3 days for this because there's so much about behavior that you can observe. Everything from way someone would brace themselves. They lean up on the couch. They have to, you know, obvious kind of body language, things that we're sort of used to like this. To, you know, there we even had a whole class on architectural types about how people will hold their hands, for example, can be telling a story like they're looking for connection when they do something like this. There's all sorts of really interesting ways we don't have time to go into today, maybe for another time. But there's all sorts of ways that people can be showing through their behavior. I remember teaching a little bit of this in the school in Denmark, and I had a lady from Finland there. And she was describing how, I just asked, you know, let's try this out. She gave gave me a problem. She says, I'm really mad at my husband. I said, what's going on? Well, he didn't come to an award ceremony because she's an author and had several books published. And he didn't come to an award ceremony. And, of course, it made her upset. And so she started talking about it, and she started to go like this. And she said, and he wouldn't come. And I said, Sonia, notice that. Notice what? See, oftentimes they're not even aware of their own behavior. I said, did you notice your finger? And I tried to do this very gently. As a matter of fact, I've learned to even ask permission. Is it okay if I show you what you did? Because sometimes doing it for them can be like, oh, did I do that? Oh, you know, it caused too much embarrassment. So I said, Sonia, would it be all right if I showed you what you did? She said, sure. I said, you did this with your finger. She goes, oh, I didn't know that. I said, would you mind doing that again? This is what how you want to work with behavior. Would you mind doing that behavior again? So she started doing that, and no connection. And I said, now slow it down. There's something about slowing it down in particular that really unwinds that nervous system. Slow it down. And as she did it, I said, as simple as this, ask that hand, what is it trying to say? If the hand itself had a little tiny mouth, what would it say that maybe you're not allowed to say? And I'll oftentimes tell people, you're allowed to say whatever you want to, even including swearing. Because sometimes, seriously, sometimes as Christians, counselors, we have to kind of give some people to kind of go out of the box a little bit. Because we all filter ourselves, right? And so she did this real slow. She wasn't connecting with it. So I said, well, speed it up. She speeded it up in this case. Oftentimes they get connected more, actually doing it slower. In this case, she speeded up and she started going like this. And she said, you didn't see me. And as soon as she said that, the handshaking stopped. And you could just see she dropped down into this lower stage. And you could just see she was like, oh, that's it. I don't feel seen. See, she went from this, I call it almost a surface level of, I'm mad at my husband because he didn't come to an award ceremony, to something that's a lot deeper. Because this really wasn't about award ceremony. That just happened to be the tip of the iceberg. It was the feeling of not being seen, right? And so when you're helping them slow these things down, remember, in this case, she didn't have to tell me anything more than my husband didn't show up for an award ceremony. I didn't have to ask her date and time and, you know, give her the third degree, so to speak, asking her all these questions. We could just simply work with these kind of things. So asking, looking for behavior, having them slow it down, having them notice it, right? I'm going to come back to all of these in summary here in a moment, but I wanted you to just kind of get an idea. The A stands for affect. Affect. Oops. Affect or emotion. See, in this case, when Sonia finally shook that hand and said, he doesn't see me, that sinking down went right into the real affect, the deeper place of, this is what it's about. I feel unseen. My husband doesn't see me. He doesn't get this. This has really been interesting to see how, because when they were, and this doesn't have to be in order, by the way. I just happen to be giving you illustration by order. People will jump around all the time. But as they work through some of this, they're actually getting way out of their head and much more into their body. And that's what makes it powerful, because remember, trauma isn't about an event. We all talk like it is, right? I was in a car accident in 1985, and right? We have this timeline. But trauma for our body feels like it's happening right now or happened 2 seconds ago. Especially when we hit a dream, flashback memory, smell, all the things you think of in your five senses, boom, the person could be right back there, even though it happened, you know, a long, long time ago. So for them, you're dealing with how they sense, the image they get, and the behaviors at that moment. You're not asking, how did you feel back when you had a car accident? Or what did you sense in your body when XYZ happened to you when you were a little kid? No. That's not relevant. What's relevant is how they show up right then and there for your ministry time. because you're trying to deal with what's going on in their body and through their sensations. And then you're helping give some affect to it or having them understand it, right? Sadness, anger. I know Teo's talked before about blessing anger. You know, this is one thing I really learned from him. Sometimes people, this is one of the emotions that a lot of people are really afraid to go to, especially we as Christians, because we talk ourselves out of it, right? I shouldn't be angry. Do you hear the should, right? I shouldn't be angry. I shouldn't do that. And what we're doing is we're stuffing our emotions down. So going back to the deer illustration, the deer doesn't have this, you know, superhuman brain like we do that's highly developed and the prefrontal cortex and all this fancy stuff that goes on in this part of our brain that says this is right and this is wrong. That's where judgment comes from, right? That's why they can do PET scans, for example. People get drunk or on marijuana or porn, and this part of the brain actually has looks like it's Swiss cheese because blood quits flowing there when they're drunk or they're watching porn. It's, yeah. Same PET scans. Because, exactly, the electricity stops flowing, the blood stops getting there, and people will do stupid stuff. This is why people take, this is why drunks will drive crazy, right? All over the road and do stupid stuff. This is why highly addicted people will do stupid stuff and go sleep with a prostitute and maybe chance AIDS or, you know, some other SID or something, you know, and because STD, I mean, or something like that, because they're not actually thinking. This part of the brain's gone offline. And because we have this brain, it also knows right and wrong, and it also shames us. It's our internal shamer, or our shoulder, or as Lisa likes to say, you know, we try to tongue-in-cheek should on ourselves. So I had to put that one on you. And so we have this thing going off inside of our brain, right, that doesn't allow the emotion to be there. So it says, I shouldn't be angry. Stop anger. Stop feeling that way, right? And we're almost like we're beating ourselves up for that emotion. And because of that, if we're not connecting with the emotion, we've actually cut off one of the channels in our own self of understanding. Because understanding, not this understanding, nervous system understanding is what helps release that trauma from the body. Now, your last one up here, you're probably all wondering, what's the M for? The M is for meaning. And all the psychotherapists or counselors in the room are like, oh, finally, there we go. The meaning, yeah, the stuff we talk about, right? Here's where the real, you know, work can be done, so we think, because now they're actually talking, right? There's meaning, there's description, there's, but you know what? This is only one of the channels. And sometimes people will come to you first with a meaning. Sometimes people will come with a sensation. Sometimes you'll just know, you'll notice body behavior, right? Tick or something, or nervous energy, the person that's got to tap their, you know, bounce their foot all the time, if you can see my foot. You'll notice these things. You'll notice somebody that has a hard time settling, you know. I'm a rocker myself. I like to rock. I have a hard time sitting. Yeah, amen, brother. The two ADDs in the room, you know. I like to sit there and rock, you know, and people have noticed that. Eric, you have a hard time sitting still sometimes. Yeah, sometimes I do. And I'm learning to unwind my own nervous system because I can do this with myself. What am I noticing right now? Where do I sense that in my body? Is there an image or a picture, dream, visions, all that kind of stuff can flow in this idea of imagery. What am I noticing in my behavior, you know? Well, I notice I'm, you know, jittery or I'm, you know, rocking or I'm scanning around the room or I'm pacing or, you know, it can show up a thousand different ways, right, with the people that we minister to or ourselves. What am I feeling? Whether that's the general anxiety and I have no idea what it's about. Whoops, just spilled water. General anxiety and I don't know what I'm doing. No. General anxiety and I'm just feeling all sorts of weird feelings and I don't know why. Or we can be very specific. So why this is important, not only you can imagine for yourself, But when you're ministering to people, if you keep this in your head, Sibam, and can remember it, what it helps you do is ask questions. Because what you will find is a lot of people that you minister to will usually lock in on one or two or three at most channels of information. It means you're actually missing out on some possible new information about what's going on there. Because if you're just used to talk or you're just used to prayer or you're just used to whatever form, think a little bit broader. Because now you have a chance to look at this and go, wow, there's other channels of information. So maybe you have, for example, my Julie, where she's only able to talk about stuff in her body, and you try to go with an image like, I don't see anything, or, you know, they're sitting as cold as stone, you're not noticing any behavior, or maybe that is their behavior, and you're not aware of it. You know, or you're looking for all these kind of things. So by asking questions, well, you're feeling that in your body, what do you notice? I notice a warmth in my chest. Well, what would that warmth in your chest say if it had a little mouth, right? That's another way, as I mentioned before. Or what if they start with just affect? They come in crying, right? And usually when they're crying or something, they want to tell the story. Tears, by the way, is a wonderful release. It's one of the things that we do to shake. And again, that's one of those areas that we usually shut down, either ourselves or other people. Don't cry, right? Stop it. How many of you have been in a church service where someone's manifesting in the power of the Spirit and the Lord's doing something, or maybe their nervous system is just unwinding and someone says, we don't do that here. And then you're shamed. Or ushers, can you come, you know, right? Now, it could be demonic. It could be someone's just looking for attention. I get all that. There's lots of other possibilities, but sometimes it's just somebody's finally unwinding something that's been there for so long that they can't control it. And we so easily, quickly try to shut those feelings and those emotions down, right? So we shut down behaviors. We shut down affect. Big boys don't cry, right, men? We've all heard that one, where we're trying to, you know, squelch that. And the problem, again, is our own brains, this thinking part of our brains, doing the same thing to us. Don't do that. Stop that. Quit thinking like that. You should be better than that, right? And all the self-talk. I like to tell people, if you're ministering to someone, ask them about their self-talk, because the self-talk is a great thermometer to the soul. I love calling self-talk the thermometer to their soul. Because you find out a lot about people by asking about their self-talk. I was totally unaware of my self-talk. I never even thought about it till somebody actually called it out on me for the same thing. And I realized I had really bad self-talk, and I still can have it. Oh, I'll give you an actual illustration. Driving down 71 Highway, and I'm supposed to get off of Main Street, and I'm just, you know, early morning, or I'm a little dazed, or I'm not thinking, I'm listening to something on the radio. And next thing I know, I can't get over in time because there's a big truck, and I miss the exit. And what do I say to myself? You would think I would say, oh, shoot, I missed the exit. I guess I have to turn around. No, it's really it got really negative. You freaking idiot, and all sorts of other stuff, right? Serious. Okay, thank you. There's a few of you nodding your head. You recognize this, right? And I almost had to jump out of my skin and go, oh my gosh, where did that come from? Because usually it comes from name calling or being called by that. And I thought, my parents never used those words. You know, I never, my goodness, I'm angry at myself. See, it was anger that got shoved into my nervous system. Anger that wasn't allowed to be expressed, a whole long story of my counseling journey, and anger that didn't get to be expressed that got shoved down deep into my soul. How do you ask people? Yeah, so this is one of those things you can ask them. So when you missed that exit, Eric, what happened? What did you do? Behavior. What were you feeling when you missed that exit? I was feeling like a real bleep, 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 right? See, I mean, I don't have to say what was your self-talk. I can hear it other ways. Yeah. When you missed that exit, Eric, off of, and you didn't make it over on Main Street, what did you notice going on in your body? What do you notice now as you tell me that story? Remember, we want to ask him for the present. What do you notice now? Oh, I feel this knot in my stomach. I am such an idiot. Oh, okay. You hear that? So now there's some things to work with, because what I've done is I've taken something just as quote-unquote innocent as missing an exit, and I'm getting these different channels of information. So when you notice it, when you miss the exit and you noticed this tightness in your stomach, Eric, was there a picture, or did you can you think of something, or is there some kind of image that pops up in your mind? Yeah, I see myself just going like this to myself. See, now I've got an image to work with, right? So it's a wonderful way to gather all sorts of information that you might have missed had you just been simply talking about missing an exit or having a car accident or falling, or take big and little tiny traumas, right? If there is such a thing. It's all how the person interprets it, right? So, but just to call it as a generic name, the big or little traumas, right? And how that person experiences it. So this is a wonderful way. So keep this in your head. Think about this SIBAM as a way to do it. Now, let me just share some things I was going to come back to. What if a person isn't able to go to one of these channels? So oftentimes, sensation is one of those big ones. People don't feel in their body. You might ask them, well, what do you notice in your body right now? Notice? Notice what? Almost like they're saying, body? What body? Because in severe trauma, especially sexual abuse, this part of the body got cut off. I don't want to feel there. I don't want to answer that question. I don't like that question. This is their subconscious talking. I don't like this question. I don't want to answer that question because I don't want to have a body. My body betrayed me. I don't want to give it any kind of reference. As you work, skip that one for the moment. As you start to work with these other channels, this is why this is so important. You are actually helping them learn to come back to this one. Teo mentioned last night the Wall of Peace. I mentioned, you know, and gave him a little shout out how he's a pioneer. This is one of the things that Peter Levine and others are talking about now as though it's a brand new subject. And he's been doing this without even knowing it. And it's called pendulation. If you think of a big pendulum clock, right? It's going back and forward. In the world, the psychological world, in the somatic experience, they call it pendulating between something difficult and something pleasant. To use Teo's term from last night, you're pendulating from the peace of the Lord to a little bit tougher memory. Back to the peace of the Lord to a tougher part of the memory. And what you're doing is you're pendulating back and forward. So this body that I don't want to feel, don't ask me that question again, Eric. I don't want to be there. One of the ways you can get them to begin to feel about the body is go for a positive. Okay, this is really important. Well, if you're having a hard time feeling in your body, you know, where do you notice what part of your body might just feel kind of relaxed or maybe just neutral? I've seen people literally do this. Very oftentimes their foot. I'm shaking my foot if you can't see it. They'll just start shaking their foot, and I'll go, well, I notice you're shaking your foot. Behavior. I notice you're shaking your foot. Yeah. What do you notice there? Not much, but at least it doesn't feel tight like the rest of me. Great. Great. We've made progress because they're got in touch. But it's because of the pendulation that they could get in touch. So in this case, maybe God's not even safe, or prayer's not safe, or they're not going to be able to, you know, do the Wall of Peace stuff like Teo talked about last night, but they can use something like their foot. Or like Lisa mentioned earlier this morning, of flowers and beauty of nature, right? So this is where image can come in. So maybe the image of this horrible thing that I'm here to tell you about, but I don't want to tell you about in counseling, I notice you're looking outside the window. Yeah. What do you notice out there? Oh, it's a beautiful day. I notice it's up high. Yeah. What do you like about seeing up high here? You know, I can see a little bit of the traffic, and I don't know. It just feels like I'm a bird. Do you hear that? Do you hear the imagery coming through the sensations, through visualizing outside? So you're getting all these different channels of information. So what do you notice when you feel like a bird, Eric, and you're just looking out the window? Now, you got to be careful they're not dissociating, right? They're not literally going out the window. But what do you notice in your body? Oh, it just feels nice. Great. Nice and good are nice answers, but ask them to go a little deeper. And a nice, good way to go deeper is just say, how do you notice nice in your body? See, because we use those words all the time. How do you feel in your body? Good. What do you notice? Oh, nothing. Or, you know, something. Or, you know, we have these kind of generic terms. Ask them to go a little deeper by simply asking them, how do you notice nothing in your body? How do you notice good in your body? Well, I feel good because I just feel, did you notice my breath? They'll oftentimes do that. Behavior. I feel like I can breathe. Yeah, I saw that. I noticed you just took a deep breath. See, sometimes for people who aren't used to being in their bodies because of trauma, don't like to feel anything, including or notice anything, including their breath. So don't make them breathe. Just notice what they do organically. I just noticed you took a nice breath, right? Just help them notice, help them become more aware. Because as they do that, they're developing a capacity. Because what's happening is capacity is growing, both to be in their body, to notice these things. So when you actually do, if you ever do, actually talk about the story, the past, the trauma, it becomes less threatening. Because they're almost developing in themselves that sense of peace. Because they start to trust you. They know you're not after the story. You're not shining the bright spotlight, you know, on their head. And how did it happen? Where did it go? You know, and asking all these threatening questions. So they're able to relax more. So does that help? So that's what you do with people that have a hard time staying in their body. So people might have a hard time, for example, going to affect. They don't feel anything. I'm numb. I don't feel any emotion, right? Help them, again, help them go to some positive stuff. When's the last time you went on vacation? Oh, I went 3 years ago. Oh, where'd you go? We went to the Caribbean. Oh, nice. What'd you do there? Oh, we took a cruise ship. Great. What's your favorite memory of that? I was sitting out on the sun deck and just enjoying the cool breeze. Oh, that sounds wonderful. Tell me a little bit more about that. See how you're having them go to the positive? As you were feeling that cold breeze, what did you notice in your body? Oh, I just felt so relaxed. It felt so good. Oh, well, how do you notice good in your body? Just felt like I could finally be myself. And so when you're finally yourself, what's that like inside of you? I'm at home. Do you see how they're actually talking about affect through image and other things? So you're starting to tap into these different kind of sensations. So questions? Yes.
So where do you go with that?
Great question. Nowhere. No, I'm kidding. Because when you get this information, now you're able to help them go deeper into whatever the situation is. And so oftentimes, just having them notice this, Mary, they start to unravel. So you can say, for example, now that you've shared some of these things, just say we camped out there. I don't know anything more of their story. What do you notice in your body right now? Man, I feel so much more relaxed. Great. How do you notice relaxed in your body? Blah, 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 they might say. So, are you ready for prayer? Or would you like to, you know, share something a little bit more of your story or whatever. But you can almost kind of tell because they went from this internal high energy, even if they're not showing it physically, to unwinding it enough to where they can maybe actually go there, either in prayer, in ministry, and this is where you can bring in the other tools, powerful peace, theophostic, manual process, so on, and then take that the next step. Because what they've done is they've cut off some of the guard. And just by allowing that shift or that movement to happen, I don't feel so tense. My stomach doesn't feel so tight. That image of the rock, it's not a rock anymore. Now it's a nice waterfall, blah, 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 right? That alone, just seeing that shift, you can actually tell they've gotten better. They're like, wow, this was amazing. Thank you. You know, you're like, I didn't do anything. but ask questions. Because what's happening is their own nervous system is unwinding this. And so now they're so much more ready to actually talk about the story or trauma or whatever like that. Yeah. I actually think it does. I don't think there's one thing over another so much, but this does it from a nervous system sense. Oh, sorry. Can you repeat it again?
Does this cause more of a permanent shift than like engaging with the Lord
in
an interactive gratitude or a 5-bar
moment? So does this cause more of a permanent? Yes, oftentimes it does. I mean, gratitude is another way of tackling some of this stuff, obviously. 5-bar moment with God, powerful peace. You're still, you know, you're taking some of these actual other elements and you're actually bringing them into this. But why it's more permanent is because the nervous system that has held on to this trauma is starting to shift, is starting to unravel. And so that's why it actually becomes more permanent, yes. Because they're then able to drink in the words or the prayer or the ministry so much deeper. Yeah. Lisa.
So the point is that the nervous system is stuck in the on position, or the shutdown position?
Yeah.
And this is completing the cycle, which kind of resets it, so you feel safe again.
Yeah.
When you're able to defend yourself, you feel safe. When you weren't able to defend yourself, you don't feel safe.
So that's where I was going with this, to come back to where I started. If you think of that nervous system, and how we're supposed to be here between the, you know, high parasympathetic or the low parasympathetic and high sympathetic. If we're supposed to be here and we're dealing with people because of their trauma that are way up here, when they start doing some of these things, then they're able to receive prayer and counseling and so on. Not only do they drop more down here into the normal range, and so they're actually unwinding, but one of the things they get to do is, you asked earlier, Mary, too, what do you do with this? Is you can get them to do now what they couldn't do before. This is where it really becomes powerful, because once they've come down from this fight or flight a little bit lower, question like, if you could, you know, you mentioned your abuser, for example. If you could do something now and you couldn't do it back then, what would your body want to do? You'd want to push them away. You might see them do that. Then you slow that down. I noticed that you did this with your... Is it okay if I show you you did this with your hand? Yeah. Would it be okay if I did that with you? And let's do this really slow, Julie. Let's intentionally push him away. Yeah. Yeah. And people, you can do, Dale, can I use you as a little demo? You can also do this with a person, is have them stand next to you, stand up here so that people behind you can see, we'll kind of do an angle. What you can have them do is you can have them push you. And this isn't so that they're thinking of you as an abuser necessarily, but it's giving them some pressure points. So you tell them what you're going to do. You're going to say, well, I noticed that, you know, you would like to push them away. Or maybe they haven't even done that. But you can say, you know, one of the things that unravels it from your nervous system is for you to be activated. Because when they were frozen, when they couldn't fight back, right, especially down here, when they've dropped down to the frozen state, one of the ways to unfreeze is to give them a chance to, you know, fight back, so to speak. And of course, we can't change the past, but for your nervous system, they can feel like they get a second chance. So you tell the person you're ministering to, when you're ready, would you be willing to raise your hands and meet mine? So you give him a chance to think about it, and when he's ready, he meets mine. And then I'll tell him, now I'm going to brace myself, and you are welcome to push, when you're ready, to push me as hard as you want to. Yeah. And I'm going to give him enough resistance, that's why I'm bracing myself, go ahead. So I'm giving them resistance, but I'm going to push harder. And I'll say, more, 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 and then I'll let them win. Because just that alone, thank you, Just that kind of activity alone, it looks so simple, but just doing that gives their nervous system a chance of, oh, I finally get to do that, right? Or take a car accident, having them do slow motion. I finally got to brace myself, right? Or like going back to Ray, chewing the air, unlocking the jaw. Because what we're doing is we're going back to sensations, imagery, behavior, affect, meaning. We're doing all five of these, but we're doing it from a nervous system, physiological sense. So this is just one example. Completing the cycle. Yes, completing the nerve. So going back to the deer runs off, right? It realizes, it looks around. If it's around other deer, they call it checking in with the herd, right? We do this too. We check in with the herd. And then when we know everything's safe, they shake it off. How many of you have been in an airplane with severe turbulence? Not the normal bouncy, severe. What does everyone do, almost everybody do, when the plane gets calm? That's true. They're ringing the bell, ding, ding, ding. I don't know if you heard him, he said drink. That was great. Yeah, you're right, Dale. They drink, and what do they start doing? They start talking. Oh, my gosh, that was incredible. Last year I was on a plane, and off they go, right? They start telling their story. That's how we check in with the herd. That's what we do, right? As soon as something bad happens, we check in with the herd. Oh, my gosh, can I tell you something? That's our checking in with the herd. And it's a way to shake off from our nervous system. But sometimes we get to complete that action, and sometimes we don't. So take a fall, for example. If I fall and my hands go out, I'm going to maybe skin my knees or hurt, but I had a chance at least to defend myself. Sometimes this happens especially with elderly, as you can imagine, because they're older, their reactions are slower, so they fall and they never get a chance to put their hands out or brace. And so just this action alone of slowing that down, imagining they're falling. For example, in one of my classes, we sat on big yoga balls and we had to do slow motion falling to get the feel and notice the sensation in our body as we were starting to fall. And then a simple question is, what would you do if you could do anything? This is a great question. It's on your sheet, the notes. If you could do anything, what would your body want to do? Well, it would want to stick out its hands. Good, stick out your hands, right? Or use it with a trauma patient or victim, right? What would your body want to do? Because what they want to do and maybe never got to do, maybe it's kicking somebody, right? And see, sometimes it can be really feels nice to do it cathartically, right? We take a stick and, I'm so angry, and we bang away at something, right? That can be very cathartic for the moment, but for our nervous system, it actually doesn't unwind it. I'm not totally sure, because it's something about slowing it down. So emotionally, it feels good, but it hasn't hit some of the sensations and behaviors because we're doing it too fast. In this case, we're doing it too fast, and our nervous system isn't getting a chance to catch up and integrate with it. And so when we get angry and we do it in slow motion. So another thing I do is I have a big pillow when I minister to people, big long pillow, big white one, and I'll hold it and I'll tell them to do slow motion boxing. And feel that punch hit the pillow. Boom. Now, cathartically, they could do it, right? And I'm going to have to really hold them and hope they don't hit me in the face. But I have found that actually doesn't, they might feel better, but it actually doesn't unwind their system. It's when they slow it down and they can get the sensation, feel your muscle tightening, feel the hand gripping, feel that energy going into the pillow. Boom. See how slow, it's that slow. Because what's happening is they're integrating these other kind of channels of information, and so they're able to receive it in a deeper way. Jesse. Apps. That's exactly right, Jesse. Yep. Because it's all about control. Where they were out of control before, something was done under them that they didn't want. And you could take 1,000 examples of that, right? And now they get to be in control. Absolutely. Yeah. Marianne.
And her fingers.
Mm. Yeah. 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 You could try something like, hey, would it be all right, Marianne, if I just did what you just did and did it really slow? I noticed you went like this, and that's kind of cool. I'm wondering, could you do that with me really slow? What do you notice as you do that? And so even in your tone of voice
and slowing it down.
Yeah, because for their nervous system, it almost feels like, what are you doing? Do you hear the difference? Yeah. Because for you and I, in our lower nervous system, right, you know, down here, it's maybe no big deal. But for them, that's, I don't want you to see that. So I hope this helps you. There's more notes on the website. Keep this in mind. Again, you can do moms, you can do this with your kids when they come home and say, yeah, it was a terrible day at school, right? Oh, how do you notice that in your body, you know, right? You start asking these kind of questions. It's amazing the information you start to get out of people just by thinking Cybam, right? Sensation, image, behavior, affect, and meaning. And see if you can use that for more information. Get them to move, change, do something, activate the systems that got stuck, and see if it helps unwind what's going on inside. Yes. I don't know. I would imagine yes, but I don't know. Yeah. The question was, does this impact the epigenetics? So I would imagine it probably does, but I don't really know, Mary. Great question. Yeah. All right, everyone stand up if you would. And I'm going to have Teo and Lisa come up here.